Pacifica's Peace Watch. This is a show about peace, preserving it, promoting it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Across the nation, congressional representatives that voted to grant George W. Bush authorization for the use of military force against Iraq are receiving visits from their constituents. Yesterday, around 2 o'clock, roughly a dozen members of the Houston Coalition for Justice, Not War, including activists with Not in Our Name, occupied the office of Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, Republican from Texas. Reporters David Stiles and Renee Feltz from Pacifica Station KPFT bring us the sounds of the demonstration from Houston, Texas.
Yolanda Garza Burwell was inside Senator Hutchison's office before being asked to leave. While some of the protesters continued to occupy the office, Burwell joined with others outside the federal building in a solidarity demonstration.
We are right now at Ms. Hutchison, our senator of Texas. We present her with a citizen's arrest because we are extremely concerned that she has given power to Bush contrary to our desire not to invade Iraq. And right now, there are several members of our Houston Coalition for Justice, Not War, sitting there, and they will not move unless they are asked or unless they are removed from there.
Describe to me what the scene is like up there, from when you went up there until when you came down.
Okay, well, the scene, obviously, when we arrived, we were asked to sign a book. And we presented ourselves. The assistant manager or the manager or the introduced himself. It was very pleasant. They were very nice. However, they wanted us immediately to come downstairs. They did not want to see us over there. We mentioned to them, since most of us are we are citizens and we pay our taxes, that they...
Senator Hutchison's office.
Hi, this is Renee Feltz from KPFT News. I was just up there looking for some people that were supposed to visit the office. Do you know if the protesters have arrived yet?
Yes, they're here. They're speaking with someone in our office.
Are they trying to visit? Are they just coming to present something and leaving?
Hold on, please. Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
They're going to come downstairs in a moment.
Houston Coalition for Justice, Not War member Ken Freeland reads a statement from the protesters.
The goal of today's action is to hold Senator Hutchison publicly accountable for flouting the democratic process and lending her support to a major crime against humanity. We join with millions of people in this country and hundreds of millions worldwide in crying out against the planned war of terror against our sisters and brothers in Iraq. We say through our actions, not in our name, will this government pursue its agenda of global domination in utter contempt of the rule of law and the sanctity of life. Three of us will leave the senator's office only if compelled by arrest. We believe Ms. Hutchison has forfeited her right to retain an office of public trust, and we reclaim it for the people she has betrayed. The senator chose to disregard an outpouring of citizen concern that reached her through normal channels, and instead heeded the wishes of the oil industry and the weapons makers. So we now speak in an extraordinary way to prevent an extraordinary atrocity. It can no longer be business as usual for us as long as the usual business of our government has become the unprovoked slaughter of any people whose nation it wishes to bring under its control. We hope that what we do will trouble the complacency of those who have tried to ignore the human cost of the planned aggression and will help firm up the resolve of those who know it is a moral outrage.
Inside the federal building, Diane Bolanowski and Mark Waller explain why they have chosen to occupy Hutchison's office.
We've never really seen her hold a town hall meeting or actually address issues that were important to her constituents. And so we were also asking her to hold a town meeting or somehow address those in her constituency that are against this war. I personally have written to her at least 25 times in the last month, called her office at least 10 times. I've never received a response. You know, I guess the main gist is, you know, are we still living in a democracy? Are we represented?
The Constitution was created the way it is for a very good reason. And one individual, no matter who that person is, no matter how trustworthy that person is, should never have the power to send global military forces out to kill people in other nations. That was specifically put into the hands of a larger deliberative body. And now that larger deliberative body has given that up, has abdicated that to one man who, quite frankly, a very large portion of the country does not trust. And I have taken other means to try to make my voice heard, joining with thousands in D.C., with at least 1,000 in Austin. I've gone out with crowds to the Crawford Ranch, where nobody has been listening to us. Nobody has been hearing our voice. I've made the phone calls. I've sent the emails. It's not working. And so it's necessary to go a little bit beyond that, to carry this message out and to galvanize the broad support that our side has on this already, and to get people to get up and get out of their seats and start taking the actions that are necessary to stop this war before it starts and to stop the unnecessary killing.
A lot of people that talk about the protesters use the term unpatriotic for protesting or for basically not supporting their president. As a former serviceman, how would you respond to that?
I understand the people who are in the service, and the president is their commander-in-chief, and I don't fault them for that. But I think that they really do need to consider the means of which they're being used. That I don't think that they are being used in the service of the defense of this country. If they look into the economic interests, et cetera, it's very clear what the president is doing. I would not hesitate to put my life on the line, to give my life in the defense of this nation, but that's not what's going on. And so now I am doing what's necessary to defend everyone from unnecessary violence.
At 5:30, Hutchinson's aide, Jason Fuller, explained it was time to go. Federal security officials helped him clear the office and escorted the non-arrested protesters outside.
It's 5:30 right now.
No.
And our office is closed, as well as the federal building is closed. We've been informed by Federal Protective Services that all non-federal employees have to vacate the building. So I don't think that comes as a surprise to anyone here in the room.
Yeah, because I got 5:27. I just set it to the
window. So it seems to me we got about 3 more minutes till closing.
We're going by our clock.
Apparently fast.
In any event, I'm going to ask everyone. We've had a meeting for several hours, and we've exchanged our ideas. And I appreciate y'all coming by today. And at this point, I'm going to ask y'all if y'all wouldn't mind leaving.
Y'all understand that? Okay, would you leave?
I'm not going to. I don't intend to leave by my own volition unless I'm under arrest.
No, I'm
not going to stay under my own free will.
Okay.
I will not resist arrest.
Ma'am, you need to leave.
I will cooperate, folks.
Okay.
Do whatever he's saying.
All right, let's go, people. We need to go upstairs. We need to get on this.
Sir, could you explain what's happening inside?
No, ma'am. Can you take everyone
you don't know what's
place,
happening?
Please?
Before we leave, could you describe what's taking place with the two people inside the office?
They're under arrest. They're under arrest. For?
Right, for arrest for what,
please?
What are they being arrested for?
Failure to leave the building. Come on, let's go.
Sure.
You want us to go this way? You want us to help? This way, I'll let you out the door.
Sure, she gets
her. Then, you know, it's us having to leave.
Roughly half an hour after the office was cleared, the arrested protesters were released to the solidarity demonstration. Could you bring us up to date on, you know, we were all forced to leave at 5:30 and you guys stayed up there. Can you tell us what happened after everybody else left?
Sure. Basically, the three of us who had decided to stay, when the police officers came in, we let them know that we didn't intend to leave under our own volition. And we asked them if they were putting us under arrest. And when they told us yes, then we decided to comply with them. They had everybody else out of the office besides the three of us they had put under arrest, they issued us citations for failure to comply with, hold on, let me get the official terminology. Failure to comply with designated official. And it $50 ticket.
How do you feel right now?
Well, a little relieved, a little disappointed, actually. And I'm not sure. I feel good that I'm out here and I see all this support. I'm very happy that we got the immediate attention that we did, because that was one of our goals today, to get the word out there.
In his speech in Cincinnati last week, President Bush made the case for preemptive strikes against Iraq to protect the United States from Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. But many critics have charged that the administration has offered little new evidence to demonstrate why Iraq is more of a threat now or why a war is necessary. In fact, they say most of the claims the president is now making are the same ones offered by his father, George Bush Sr., over a decade ago. We present now a creative audio collage of the first President Bush juxtaposed with MIT professor and author Noam Chomsky.
This conflict started August 2nd. When the dictator of Iraq invaded a small and helpless neighbor.
The crime has nothing to do with invasions, pretty much duplicating what the U.S. had just done a couple of months before in Panama.
Kuwait, a member of the Arab League and a member of the United Nations, was crushed. Its people brutalized. 5 months ago, Saddam Hussein started this cruel war against Kuwait.
He certainly is a brutal tyrant and a mass murderer, just as he was when the U.S. was openly supporting him. The overwhelming majority of his crimes were committed during this period when he was a friend and ally.
While the world waited, Saddam Hussein systematically raped, pillaged, and plundered a tiny nation. No threat to his own.
At the time of the Halabja atrocities and later atrocities against the Kurds, the atrocities were being carried out with the support of George Bush and Margaret Thatcher.
He subjected the people of Kuwait to unspeakable atrocities. And among those maimed and murdered, innocent children.
Attack on the Kurds in northern Iraq destroyed large agricultural areas, well, it's killing plenty of people, probably tens of thousands.
Innocent children.
Plenty of people, probably tens of thousands.
Murdered.
That gave Bush an opportunity to do a favor for a big U.S. agribusiness, send extensive credits to Saddam Hussein so he can purchase agribusiness exports after they had wiped out agricultural areas in Iraq.
Others traveled to Baghdad in a variety of efforts to restore peace and justice.
I was so concerned to evade diplomatic efforts, and they did.
Arab leaders sought what became known as an Arab solution, only to conclude that Saddam Hussein was unwilling to leave Kuwait.
Chief of Staff Powell, in internal discussion, said the problem is that Saddam may withdraw, leaving a puppet regime in place, at which point everyone in the Arab world will be happy. That's what they expected, and they wanted to prevent.
No choice but to drive Saddam from Kuwait by force. We will not fail.
The rebelling Iraqi generals requested from the United States, from General Schwarzkopf, they wanted to obtain, didn't want help, but they wanted access to captured Iraqi arms that they could use in their effort to overthrow the tyrant and carry out a popular revolution. Now, that was refused. They were not permitted access to arms. Saddam Hussein was authorized to use military gunships to attack the rebels.
Air attacks are underway against military targets in Iraq. Our operations are designed to best protect the lives of all the coalition forces by targeting Saddam's vast military arsenal.
The bombers destroyed dams, water supply stations, sewage stations,
military arsenal,
pumping stations, electrical system. All of that amounts to biological warfare. You can simply ask yourself what would happen if something comparable was done, say, in Boston. People would be dying like flies from disease and starvation.
Unspeakable atrocities.
It's biological warfare with exactly the catastrophic effect that they predicted.
Iraq will eventually comply with all relevant United Nations resolutions, and then When peace is restored, it is our hope that Iraq will live as a peaceful and cooperative member of the family of nations, thus enhancing the security and stability of the Gulf.
The rebellion was crushed. Basra was devastated, so were other areas. And the Bush administration was pretty frank about the reasons. It was March 1991, after the so-called war. They simply preferred what they called an iron-fisted Iraqi junta to the threat of a popular revolution.
Cooperative members.
And therefore had to, in the name of what's called stability,
stability of the Gulf,
had to support these major atrocities.
Unspeakable atrocities.
In which, very possibly, as many or more civilians were killed during the bombing the month earlier.
We will not fail.
Thanks to the Independent Media Center's Soundbite Brigade for bringing us that piece.
This is a poem that I wrote right after 9-1-1. It's called Somebody Blew Up America. Somebody blew up America. All thinking people oppose terrorism, both domestic and international. But one should not be used to cover the other. Somebody blew up America. They say it's some terrorist, some barbaric Arab in Afghanistan.
Freedom of political expression is one of the tenets of American life. It's also a constitutional right. But in today's political climate, more and more Americans are taking heat for expressing their views about the war in Afghanistan and going to war with Iraq. President George Bush called into question the patriotism of some Democratic congressmen who challenged his agenda to wage a unilateral war against Iraqi President Saddam Hussein and refused to issue an apology when asked to do so by Senate leaders. Our next segment focuses on an outspoken poet laureate whose progressive writings have offended some in the state of New Jersey and prompted them to call for his removal from that position. Amiri Baraka, poet laureate for New Jersey.
It's come under fire. Some people think I shouldn't be able to have the opinion that I have and be the poet laureate. Apparently only people can be poet laureate who conform with certain political groups. I mean, the Anti-Defamation League, for instance, has called me anti-Semitic because in the poem I said, well, two things. One thing I said, who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? And then the other line, I think they disagree with this. Why was five Israelis filming the explosion and cracking their sides at the notion?
Who knew the World Trade Center was going to get bombed? Who told 4,000 Israeli workers at the Twin Towers to stay home that day? Why did Sharon stay away? Who? Explosion of owl.
Well, first of all, the thing about the five Israelis, I got that from the New York Times, the Star Ledger, you know, the New Jersey paper.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, those five Israelis were arrested by the state police, which that can be checked very easily, because they were dancing on top of the truck and filming it. The truck belonged to an Israeli company called Urban Moving Systems. That company moved out of New Jersey 3 days later and moved so quickly that it left furniture in the warehouse. The other consideration, the thing about the 4,000 Israeli workers, well, the point is this, what I was saying. First of all, I'm talking about Israelis, passport-holding Israelis working for Israeli companies or some other multinational company, not Jews. And I think that's very important because suppose black people were up under the influence of, say, the backward ruler of Kenya or the Kenyan government, you know, Arab Moy, mm-hmm. or, say, this reactionary regime in Nigeria. Would that mean nobody could criticize that reactionary regime without being called anti-black? Or say that black people in the United States then will be following, say, this Nigerian dictates, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Rather than getting our experience and our understanding from our substance as black Americans. So I'm trying to figure out how is it that they can just, with impunity, run around attacking everybody, and obviously because they pay a lot of people's bills. So the point I'm making is if they do not understand that difference, if we do not understand, I mean the whole American people,
mm-hmm.
then we're being influenced, like we're being influenced to go into this war.
Well,
what they're doing, besides slandering me, saying, no matter what you say, they say anti-Semitism, so the rest of it never gets heard. You see, because I can understand people. I know if people, you know, somebody say, the Klan's up the street. I know black people, we would start looking for our sticks and stones. So the point is, I can understand somebody says anti-Semitism. You know, even American Jews would get uptight. But the point is, you have to be able to look into the substance of things and not just react. Not just react to the, some kind of idle label mashing. You know what I mean?
Yes,
and that's the point.
Mm. President Bush says that the vote from Congress last week granting him the authority to wage unilateral war against Iraq he deems
first
necessary.
First of all, I'd say this. You know, Congress has revealed again, you know, that the great majority of them don't represent anything but their pocketbooks. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the other little opportunistic kind of careerist motives. But even so, no matter what these little pipsqueaks on the Congress do, remember, we're in a world of other people. I know France and Russia certainly oppose this.
But now President Bush says that this vote last week actually means that America now speaks with one voice.
But that's a lie. Nobody even spoke to elect him. He lost by 600,000 votes, one voice. I mean, Bush, please. I mean, for people even to credit anything Bush says to me is disgusting. Bin Laden still hadn't been gotten. And then the next thing, he wants to knock off Arafat and the Palestinians, you know, using, you know, to have Israel as his surrogate in the Middle East. That was last month's war. Now, this month's war coming up is Saddam Hussein and the Iraqis, who he keeps accusing of failing to live up to UN resolutions. When has Israel ever lived up to the UN resolutions? That it had a UN resolution last month. It still hasn't lived up to. And these Israelis are just, you know, get a little batty because somebody blows up a pizza pot. And then what's the war after Iraq? Are we going then to Iran? And then after Iran, is he serious about this axis of evil that conforms to the pipeline they want to build? It would be really low comedy if it were not so dangerous.
If you had a chance to speak directly to President-elect Bush, what might you say to him?
I'd tell him to get another job, to leave us alone, to leave the people alone. I mean, go get a job. Bush should go get a job where he can't bother people. You know, like I have a short poem, very, very short. It's called a loku, you know, because the Japanese wrote the haiku, so I said Afro-Americans have to have a short form called a loku. It's called Loku for Bush, too. The main thing wrong with you is you ain't in jail. So that's that's my poetic line on Mr. Bush. You know, now they're trying to pass an ex post facto law, which is against the Constitution. They're going to make something illegal that on Wednesday that happened on Monday. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And now they're, violating my First Amendment right to speak. So it's an impossible kind of task because I don't know how they think they're going to do that, you know. And if they do succeed in doing that because of this election coming up and trying to, pull the wool over people in New Jersey's eyes, I will sue them. I feel like Muhammad Ali waiting for a chump to get in the ring. So, I mean, I don't even really fear anything they can do except I did detest this kind of, slander and character stuff. Asking me to resign or to apologize. They just have the people around here saying, well, they got the wrong man. That's right.
And the wrong man is there
That's
to stay.
That's right, because I'm not going to do either one of them. And the people in Newark say, well, you should have known that. You should have known how he was before you did it. So that's my final words on that.
New Jersey poet laureate Amira Baraka. Baraka is no stranger to controversy. He was kicked out of the Air Force. Rutgers University denied him tenure, and now the governor of New Jersey wants to fire him.
It wasn't our American terrorists.
It wasn't the Klan or the skinheads or them that blows up nigger churches or reincarnates us on death row. It wasn't Trent Lott or David Duke or Giuliani or Schindler. Helms retiring. It wasn't the gonorrhea in costume, the white sheet diseases that have murdered black people, terrorized reason and sanity, most of humanity, as they please. They say, who say? Who do say it? Who is them paying? Who tell the lies? Who in disguise? Who had the slaves? Who got the bucks out the buck? Who got fat from plantations? Who genocided Indians trying to waste the black nation? Who lived on Wall Street, the first plantation? Who cut your Johnson off? Who raped your mom? Who lynched your pa? Who got the tar? Who got the feathers? Who had the match? Who set the fires? Who killed and hired? Who say they God and still be the devil? Who the biggest only? Who the most goodest? Who do Jesus resemble? Who created everything? Who the smartest? Who the greatest? Who the richest? Who say you ugly and they the good lookingest? Who define art? Who define science? Who made the bombs? Who made the guns? Who bought the slaves? Who sold them? Who call you them names? Who say Dahmer wasn't insane? Who, who? Who stole Puerto Rico? Who stole the Indies, the Philippines, Manhattan, Australia, and Hebrides? Who forced opium on the Chinese? Who owned the building? Who got the money? Who think you're funny? Who locked you up? Who owned the papers? Who owned the slave ship? Who run the army? Who the fake president? Who the ruler? Who the banker? Who? Who own the mine? Who twist your mind? Who got bread? Who need peace? Who you think need war? Who own the oil? Who do no toil? Who own the soil? Who is not a nigger? Who is so great ain't nobody bigger? Who own the city?
Amira Baraka's Somebody Blew Up America. You've been listening to Imperatives for Peace, Pacifica's Peace Watch. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Tonight's engineer was Rolando Arrieta. Our editor is Reem Kathuda at WPFW. Our associate producers are Fidel Rodriguez of KPFK, Renee Feltz of KPFT, and Robert Knight of WBAI. Sam Husseini and Larry Binsky are consultants to the program. We had production assistance from Laurel Paget-Seekins at WPFW. Our webmaster is Pete Caracas. For copies of Peace Watch, go to www.pacificaarchives.org or call 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your feedback on the show. Send us your comments. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.